The following podcast contains advertising. To access an ad-free version of the Lawfare podcast, become a material supporter of Lawfare at patreon.com/lawfare. That's patreon.com/lawfare. Also, check out Lawfare's other podcast offerings, Rational Security, Chatter, Lawfare No Bull, and The Aftermath.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out of pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
So that we can be precise, I want to refer you to exactly what the president said and ask you whether there is any truth to it. First, the president claimed, quote, terrible. Just found out that Obama had my wires tapped in Trump Tower just before the victory. Nothing found. This is McCarthyism, unquote. Director Comey, was the president's statement that Obama had his wires tapped in Trump Tower a true statement?
With respect to the president's tweets about alleged wiretapping directed at him by the prior administration, I have no information that supports those tweets. And we have looked carefully inside the FBI. The Department of Justice has asked me to share with you that the answer is the same for the Department of Justice and all its components. The department has no information that supports those tweets.
I'm Benjamin Wittes, and this is the Lawfare Podcast Special Emergency Edition, March 21st, 2017. FBI Director James Comey and Admiral Michael Rogers of the NSA faced the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence yesterday for a rare open hearing on Russian active measures. They made news. They made a lot of news. There was also a lot of no commenting and protracted member questioning. We've cut out everything you don't need to hear, and we're giving you only the parts of this hearing that actually contain useful information. We left in exactly one sequence of no comments as a sample of what you're missing. Comey and Rogers testified for many hours. We've boiled it down to less than one. It's the Lawfare Podcast, episode 214, Comey and Rogers versus the committee, the good parts version.
Admiral Rogers, you're recognized for 5 minutes.
Thank you, sir. Chairman Nunes, ranking member Schiff, and members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to appear before you today on behalf of the men and women of the National Security Agency. I'm honored to appear besides my teammate, Director Comey, to discuss Russia's activities and intentions regarding the 2016 U.S. election and want to assure the committee that my team is doing its best to fulfill the various requests of this committee to support your ongoing investigations into this subject. Over the past weeks, NSA has been working closely with the committee to provide you the information that you require for your investigation, and I can assure you we will continue to do so. When we last met in January, we discussed the classified version of the January Intelligence Community's assessment on assessing Russian activities and intentions in the recent U.S. elections. Today, more than 2 months after we issued this assessment, we stand by it as issued. There is no change in our confidence level on the assessment. Of course, the specifics of this assessment need to remain classified to protect sensitive sources and methods. So today, I will limit my discussion to information in the public domain, that of the publicly released intelligence community assessment. I hope you will understand that there are some issues I cannot discuss in an open session, nor will I be able to provide specifics in some areas. As the committee fully knows, the intelligence community has a long-standing policy of not discussing surveillance targeting information in particular cases, as to do so would invariably open the door to compel further disclosures in litigation or the release of classified information, all of which would be harmful to our national security. Like the committee, we are also greatly concerned about leaks of classified information, as they can reveal the sources and methods we employ to provide intelligence to American policymakers and warfighters and generate advantage for our nation while protecting its citizens and interests and their privacy. I also want to assure the committee that we take very seriously that obligation to protect U.S. persons' privacy. This applies to all stages of the production of foreign intelligence, but I'd like to emphasize one area in particular, the dissemination of U.S. person information. We at NSA have strict procedures in place to make sure that our reporting and the contents of our reporting are disseminated only to those that have strict need to know for valid purposes, which primarily means in support of the development of foreign policy and to protect national security. I do want to specifically mention that among the collection of authorities that we have to target foreign actors in foreign spaces, FISA Section 702 and Executive Order 12333 have been instrumental in our ability to produce the intelligence made available to the committee and others in gathering the SIGINT facts of foreign activity in this election cycle. It would be difficult to overstate the breadth and scale of malicious cyber activity occurring today. Our adversaries, including nation states, have not rested in trying to penetrate government systems, steal our private industry's intellectual property, and make even greater strides towards the development and achievement of cyber attack capabilities. We have a hardworking and dedicated team at NSA that works every day to generate insights on this activity and to thwart its effectiveness. But cyber defense is a team sport, and one of NSA's strongest partners in this effort is Director Comey's team at the FBI. And I'm glad to be able to describe here today how we are working together to help protect the nation and our allies, to include providing a better understanding of Russian intentions and capabilities. In light of the IC assessment and findings, I welcome your investigation into overall Russian activities targeting the previous U.S. elections. NSA continues to employ rigorous analytics standards, applying them in every aspect of our intelligence reporting. Our analysts have consistently proven to be reliable and thorough in their technical and analytic efforts in providing our policymakers and warfighters with SIGINT ammunition to make informed decisions to protect our nation's freedom and ensure the safety of its citizens. They are diligently continuing to monitor for additional reflections of Russian targeting of U.S. systems and those of our friends and allies around the world, to share that information with our IC colleagues and foreign counterparts, and to produce unbiased, unprejudiced, and timely reporting of SIGINT facts in their entirety. And I look forward to your questions. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Admiral Rogers. Director Comey, you're recognized for 5 minutes.
Mr. Chairman, Ranking Member Schiff, members of the committee, thank you for including me in today's hearing. I'm honored to be here representing the people of the FBI. I hope we have shown you through our actions and our words how much we at the FBI value your oversight of our work and how much we respect your responsibility to investigate those things that are important to the American people. Thank you for showing that both are being taken very seriously. As you know, our practice is not to confirm the existence of ongoing investigations, especially those investigations that involve classified matters. But in unusual circumstances, where it is in the public interest, it may be appropriate to do so, as Justice Department policies recognize. This is one of those circumstances. I have been authorized by the Department of Justice to confirm that the FBI, as part of our counterintelligence mission, is investigating the Russian government's efforts to interfere in the 2016 presidential election. And that includes investigating the nature of any links between individuals associated with the Trump campaign and the Russian government, and whether there was any coordination between the campaign and Russia's efforts. As with any counterintelligence investigation, this will also include an assessment of whether any crimes were committed. Because it is an open, ongoing investigation and is classified, I cannot say more about what we are doing and whose conduct we are examining. At the request of congressional leaders, we have taken the extraordinary step, in coordination with the Department of Justice, of briefing this Congress's leaders, including the leaders of this committee, in a classified setting, in detail about the investigation. But I can't go into those details here. I know that is extremely frustrating to some folks. I hope you and the American people can understand. The FBI is very careful in how we handle information about our cases and about the people we are investigating. We are also very careful about the way we handle information that may be of interest to our foreign adversaries. Both of those interests are at issue in a counterintelligence investigation. Please don't draw any conclusions from the fact that I may not be able to comment on certain topics. I know speculating is part of human nature, but it really isn't fair to draw conclusions simply because I say that I can't comment. Now, some folks may want to make comparisons to past instances where the Department of Justice and the FBI have spoken about the details of some investigations. But please keep in mind that those involve the details of completed investigations. Our ability to share details with the Congress and the American people is limited when those investigations are still open, which I hope makes sense. We need to protect people's privacy. We need to make sure we don't give other people clues as to where we're going. We need to make sure that we don't give information to our foreign adversaries about what we know or don't know. We just cannot do our work well or fairly if we start talking about it while we're doing it. So we will try very, very hard to avoid that, as we always do. This work is very complex, and there is no way for me to give you a timetable as to when it will be done. We approach this work in an open-minded, independent way, and our expert investigators will conclude that work as quickly as they can, but they will always do it well, no matter how long that takes. I can promise you we will follow the facts wherever they lead. And I want to underscore something my friend Mike Rogers said. Leaks of classified information are serious, serious federal crimes for a reason. They should be investigated and, where possible, prosecuted in a way that reflects that seriousness so that people understand it simply cannot be tolerated. And I look forward to taking your questions.
On January 6th, 2017, the intelligence community assessment assessing Russian activities and intentions in recent U.S. elections stated that the types of systems Russian actors targeted or compromised were not involved in vote tallying. So my question as of today, Admiral Rogers, do you have any evidence that Russia cyber actors changed vote tallies in the state of Michigan?
No, I do not, but I would highlight we're a foreign intelligence organization, not a domestic intelligence organization. So it would be fair to say we are probably not the best organization to provide a more complete answer.
How about the state of Pennsylvania?
No, sir.
The state of Wisconsin?
No, sir.
State of Florida?
No, sir.
The state of North Carolina?
No, sir.
The state of Ohio?
No, sir.
So you have no intelligence that suggests or evidence that suggests any votes were changed?
I have nothing generated by the National Security Agency, sir.
Director Comey, do you have any evidence at the FBI that any votes were changed in the states that I mentioned to Admiral Rogers?
No.
Admiral Rogers, I know that there was a leak of information regarding Director Clapper and former Secretary of Defense Carter. We're looking at relieving you of your duty. Are you aware of those stories?
I'm aware of media reporting to that.
And those stories were leaked as soon as you had visited with President-elect Trump. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. I was asked if I would be prepared to interview with the Trump administration for a position, which I did.
Did the leak of that information at all impact your ability and your assessment that you did for the intelligence community's assessment on January 6th?
No, sir. If I spent time in this job worrying about unsourced media reporting, I'd never get any work done.
Thank you, Admiral. Director Comey, I remain extremely concerned about the widespread illegal leaks that you just referenced in your testimony. Just for the record, though, I want to get this on the record. Does the unauthorized disclosure of classified information to the press violate 18 U.S.C. 793, a section of the Espionage Act that criminalizes improperly accessing, handling, or transmitting national defense information?
Yes.
Would an unauthorized disclosure of FISA-derived information to the press violate 18 U.S.C. 798, a section of the Espionage Act that criminalizes disclosure of information concerning the communication and intelligence activities of the United States?
Yes, in addition to being a breach of our trust with the FISA court that oversees our use of those authorities.
Is it true that the NSA would need a court order based on probable cause to conduct electronic surveillance on a U.S. person inside the United States?
Yes, sir.
And just to be clear, the section of the FISA that is expiring later this year, that's 702, which we'll be talking about a little bit, cannot be used to target U.S. persons or persons in the United States. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Section 702 focuses on non-U.S. persons outside the United States primarily, correct?
Yes, sir.
Do you believe that the Section 702 is important and valuable for U.S. national security?
Yes, sir.
So it's safe to say that without having this tool, it would be a threat to our national security.
It would significantly impact my ability to generate the insights that I believe this nation needs.
In the media, there's a lot of reporting about something called incidental collection. Can you talk about what incidental collection is?
Yes, sir. Incidental collection is when we are targeting a valid foreign target, for example, and in the course of that targeting, we either get a reference to a U.S. person or suddenly a U.S. person appears as part of the conversation. That's what we call incidental collecting.
And what do you do when something like that happens? If there's a U.S. person part of an incidental collection, what kind of safeguards are put in place to make sure that...
So it depends specifically on the legal authority that we're using to execute the collection in the first place, but in broad terms, realizing, again, it varies a little bit by the specific authority that we're using to conduct the collection. We step back and we ask ourselves first, are we dealing with a U.S. person here? Is there something that we didn't expect to encounter that we've now encountered? We'll ask ourselves what leads us to believe that it is a U.S. person. If we come to the conclusion that it is a U.S. person, then we ask ourselves, are we listening to criminal activity? Are we seeing something of imminent threat or danger, for example? Or are we just receiving something that has nothing to do with any of our valid collection authority? Based on that, we'll then take a series of actions. In some case, we will just purge the collect. Make no reporting on it, not retain the data. It's incidental collection. It has no intelligence value, and it wasn't the purpose of what we were doing. In some cases, then, if we believe that there is intelligence value, for example, whether it's a reference to a U.S. person, as an example in a scenario, in our reporting, then, we will mask the identity of the individual. We'll use a phrase like U.S. person one or U.S. person two. And I would remind everyone that for our purposes, U.S. person is defined very broadly. That is not just a U.S. citizen. That is a U.S. corporation. That is a ship or aircraft that is registered in the United States. That is an internet protocol address, for example. So it's not just a particular individual, if that makes sense. The term for us is much broader because it's designed to ensure our protections of U.S. persons.
And those the procedures and protections you talked about are required and approved by the FISA court, is that correct?
Yes, sir, and the Attorney General.
And you mentioned in your opening statement that for that kind of information to be disseminated outside of your agency and the NSA, that dissemination would be strictly on a need-to-know basis. Is that correct?
We use two criteria. Is there a need to know in the course of the person or group that is asking for the identification? Is there a valid need to know in the course of the execution of their official duties?
So, like, and who would that be?
It could be another element with the intelligence community. It could be another element within NSA. It could be a military customer, for example, who's reading some of our reporting. It could be a policymaker.
Is that identity of a U.S. person communicating with a foreign target, is that ordinarily disseminated in a masked or unmasked form?
No, it is normally disseminated if we make the decision that there's intelligence value and we're going to report on it. It is normally disseminated in a masked form. I would, again, as I said, we'll use a reference U.S. person one, U.S. person
right.
two. I would highlight, if you look at the total breadth of our reporting involving U.S. persons at all is an incredibly small subset in my experience of our total reporting.
Who normally in the NSA would make the decision to unmask?
There are 20 individuals, including myself, who I have delegated this authority to approve unmasked requests.
And does the level of approval change depending on the reason for unmasking? If it was something or somebody, say, really important, would that matter,
not, or could it be? It's not necessarily designated in writing that way, but certainly by custom and tradition, at times requests will be pushed up to my, I'm the senior most of the 20 individuals, requests will be pushed to my level saying, hey, sir, we just want to make sure that you're right. Comfortable with this.
So 20 people, what procedures or safeguards are put in place to make sure that those 20 people are not unmasking, wrongly?
So they retrieve specific training. There are specific controls put in place in terms of our ability to disseminate information out of the databases associated with U.S. persons.
Okay, let's run through the exceptions quickly through a following hypothetical. If the NSA collects a communication where a target under surveillance is talking to a U.S. person, how would the NSA determine whether disseminating the U.S. person information is necessary to understanding the foreign intelligence or assess its importance?
So first we'll try to understand the nature of the conversation. Is this truly something that involves intelligence or a national security implication for the United States, or is this just very normal, reasonable conversations, in which case we have no desire to have any awareness of it? It's not applicable to our mission. And I said in that case, normally we'll purge the data. We'll ask ourselves, is there criminal activity involved? Is there potential threat or harm to U.S. individuals being discussed in the conversation, for example?
If there was criminal activity involved, what would you do then?
If it's criminal activity, we'll disseminate the information. And if the FBI or other criminal activities are on the reporting stream, in some cases, I also will generate a signed letter under my signature in specific cases to Department of Justice, highlighting that what we think we have is potential criminal activity, but because we are not a law enforcement or justice organization, we're not at a place to make that determination.
Okay, based on that, again, hypothetically, if the NSA obtained the communication of General Flynn while he was communicating with a surveillance target legally, would you please explain how General Flynn's identity could be unmasked based on the exceptions that we discussed?
Sir, I'm not going to discuss even hypotheticals about individuals. I'm sorry.
If I could make reference to a Washington Post article that I have here from February 9th, which states, let me say what it is, and I'll ask if you've read it or if you've seen it, which states, national security under Michael Flynn privately discussed U.S. sanctions against Russia with the country's ambassador to the United States during the month before President Trump took office, contrary to public assertions by Trump officials, current and former U.S. officials said. The article goes on to say that 9 current or former officials who were in senior positions at multiple agencies at the time of the call spoke under the condition of anonymity to discuss intelligence matters. When we hear that 9 former current officials had spoken to the press under the condition of anonymity, and we heard Director Comey and the chairman speak of this as a potential crime, a serious crime under the Espionage Act, assuming if this article is accurate, who would be in a position to request the unmasking of General Flynn's identity? Would that be you?
I would have the authority to do that.
Who else would?
The 19 other individuals.
Would that include Director Comey?
I'm talking about
in the NSA
individuals
alone.
Within the National Security Agency, and we're talking about NSA reporting.
But would people like Director Comey also be able to request that?
Yes.
And the Attorney General and Director Clapper, are those type of people also on this list?
Again, I'm not going to talk. In general, yes, they would be
generally
able to come
speaking,
and ask.
Not with regard
to... They would be able to come and ask. Not going to talk about the specifics
okay.
of an individual or a hypothetical scenario.
Well, here's what I'm trying to get at. If what we're talking about is a serious crime, as has been alleged, in your opinion, would leaking of a U.S. person who has been unmasked and disseminated by intelligence community officials, would that leaking to the press hurt or help our ability to conduct national security matters? Okay, if it hurts, so this leak, which through the 702 tool which we all agree is vital, or you and I at least agree to that, do you think that that leak actually threatens our national security? If it's a crime, and if it's unveiling a masked person, and this tool is so important that it could potentially jeopardize this tool when we have to try to reauthorize it in a few months, if this is used against the ability of us to reauthorize this tool, and we can't get it done because whoever did this leak, or these nine people that did this leak, create such a stir, whether it be, you know, in our legislative process or whatever, that they don't feel confident that a U.S. person under the 702 program can be masked successfully and not leaked to the press, doesn't that hurt, that leak hurt our national security?
Yes, sir.
Can you think of any reason why somebody would want to leak the identity of a masked person?
No, sir. I mean, I have raised this directly with my own workforce over the course of the last few months to remind everyone part of the ethics of our profession, not just the legal requirement, but the ethics of our profession as intelligence professionals, is we do not engage in this activity. And I've also reminded the men and women of the National Security Agency, if I become aware of any such conduct, there is no place for you on this team. One comment, if I could, I apologize,
yes,
it comes to my mind based on your question. I just want to remind everyone, and in general, FISA collection on targets in the United States has nothing to do with 702. I just want to make sure we're not confusing the two things here. 702 is collection overseas against non-U.S. persons.
But it's really going to hurt the people on this committee and you all in the intelligence community when we try to retain this tool this year and trying to convince some of our colleagues that this is really important for national security, when somebody in the intelligence community says, you know what, the hell with it. I'm going to release this person's name because I'm going to get something out of it. We're all going to be hurt by that if we can't reauthorize this tool. Do you agree with that?
Yes, sir.
Can you give us a sense of how many unmasked U.S. persons' identities were disseminated by the NSA from June 2016 to June 2017?
No, sir. As I have indicated, we're in the process of compiling that information. I will provide it to the committee, but until that work is done, I am not going to comment.
Can you tell us whether any of those disseminations broadly were involved U.S. people relating to presidential candidates Donald J. Trump or Hillary Clinton and their associates in 2016?
I won't answer until I complete the research, sir.
Do you agree programs like FISA were intentionally designed to safeguard the identity of U.S. persons?
Yes. There are other important elements of it, but that's the primary goal, I believe.
It wasn't an afterthought. It wasn't an accident. These are intentional safeguards that we put in place to protect U.S. citizens. Is that correct?
Correct.
Do you agree much of what is learned from these programs is classified or otherwise legally protected?
All FISA applications, review by the court, collection by us pursuant to our FISA authority is classified.
The dissemination of which is a felony punishable by up to 10 years in prison?
Sure, dissemination, unauthorized dissemination.
Unauthorized dissemination of classified or otherwise legally protected material punishable by a felony up to 10 years in federal prison.
Yep, yes, as it should be.
Director Comey, I want to begin by attempting to put to rest several claims made by the president about his predecessor, namely that President Obama wiretapped his phones. So that we can be precise, I want to refer you to exactly what the president said and ask you whether there is any truth to it. First, the president claimed, quote, terrible. Just found out that Obama had my wires tapped in Trump Tower just before the victory. Nothing found. This is McCarthyism, unquote. Director Comey, was the president's statement that Obama had his wires tapped in Trump Tower a true statement?
With respect to the president's tweets about alleged wiretapping directed at him by the prior administration, I have no information that supports those tweets, and we have looked carefully inside the FBI. The Department of Justice has asked me to share with you that the answer is the same for the Department of Justice and all its components. The department has no information that supports those tweets.
The president accused Mr. Obama and presumably the FBI of engaging in McCarthyism. As you understand the term McCarthyism, do you think President Obama or the FBI was engaged in such conduct?
I'm not going to try and characterize the tweets themselves. All I can tell you is we have no information that supports them.
Were you engaged in McCarthyism, Director Comey?
Try very hard not to engage in any isms of any kind, including McCarthyism.
The president second stated, quote, is it legal for a sitting president to be wiretapping a race for president prior to an election? Turned down by a court earlier, a new low, unquote. Director Comey, can you answer the president's question? Would it be legal for President Obama to have ordered a wiretap of Donald Trump?
I'm not going to characterize or respond to the tweets themselves. I can tell you in general, as Admiral Rogers and I were just saying, there is a statutory framework in the United States under which courts grant permission for electronic surveillance, either in a criminal case or a national security case, based on a showing of probable cause, carefully overseen. It's a rigorous, rigorous process that involves all three branches of government, and it's one we've lived with since the late 1970s. That's how it works. So no individual in the United States can direct electronic surveillance of anyone. It has to go through an application process, ask a judge. The judge can then make the order.
So President Obama could not unilaterally order a wiretap of anyone?
No president could.
Mr. Trump also asserted in that tweet that he was that the application or the president's order was turned down by a court. Was there any request made by the FBI or Justice Department to wiretap Donald Trump turned down by a court?
That's one of those subjects I can't comment on one way or another. Please don't interpret that in any way other than I just can't talk about anything that relates to the FISA process in an open setting.
Third, the president stated, I'd bet a good lawyer could make a great case out of the fact that President Obama was tapping my phones in October just prior to the election. Director Comey, you're a good lawyer. Can you make out a great case that President Obama wiretapped Mr. Trump's phones just prior to the election, in light of the fact you have said there's no evidence of that?
All I can say is what I said before, that we don't have any information that supports those tweets.
Well, in my view, then, you would not be a great but a very unethical lawyer to make out such a case. And finally, the president made the following accusation. How low has President Obama gone to tap my phones during the very sacred election process? This is Nixon, Watergate, bad or sick guy. Now here, I think you've said there's been no evidence of an illegal wiretap by President Obama. Is that right?
I've said the FBI and the Department of Justice have no information to support those tweets.
But there is evidence, is there not, of a break-in of the Democratic headquarters by a foreign power using cyber means?
Yes, there was. As the intelligence community report, the UNCLASS report, said in January, the Russian intelligence services hacked into a number of enterprises in the United States, including the Democratic National Committee.
And there was an effort by the Russians to cover up their break-in of the Democratic Party headquarters by using cutouts like WikiLeaks to publish the stolen material. Isn't that right?
Certainly to cover up their that they were the ones releasing it.
Director Rogers, in an effort to explain why there was no evidence supporting the president's claim that Obama had wiretapped him, the president and his spokesman, Sean Spicer, have suggested that British intelligence, through its NSA or GCHQ, wiretapped Mr. Trump on President Obama's behalf. Did you ever request that your counterparts in GCHQ should wiretap Mr. Trump on behalf of President Obama?
No, sir, nor would I. That would be expressly against the construct of the Five Eyes agreement that's been in place for decades.
And the Five Eyes are some of our closest intelligence partners, and Britain is one of them.
Yes, sir.
Have you seen any evidence that anyone else in the Obama administration made such a request?
No, sir. And again, my view is the same as Director Comey. I've seen nothing on the NSA side that we engaged in any such activity, nor that anyone ever asked us to engage in such activity.
And if you were to ask the British to spy on American, that would be a violation of U.S. law, would it not?
Yes, sir.
Our relationship with British intelligence is one of the closest we have with any foreign services. Isn't that true?
Yes, sir.
Now, our British allies have called the president's suggestion that they wiretapped him for Obama nonsense and utterly ridiculous. Would you agree?
Yes, sir.
Does it do damage to our relationship with one of our closest intelligence partners for the president to make a baseless claim that the British participated in a conspiracy against him?
I think it clearly frustrates a key ally of ours.
Certainly wouldn't endear the British intelligence services to continue working with us, would it?
I believe that the relationship is strong enough. This is something we'll be able to deal with.
Director Rogers, President Trump recently met with German Chancellor Angela Merkel. During a joint press conference, the President suggested that they both had something in common, that they had both been wiretapped by President Obama. Director Comey has just demonstrated why the claims by the President about his being wiretapped by Obama were unsupported by any evidence. But the claim he made about wiretapping directed at Merkel referred to something that came up in the context of the Snowden disclosures. I'm not going to ask you to comment on whether the Chancellor was the subject of any eavesdropping, but I would like to ask you whether the Snowden disclosures did damage to our relationship with our German ally, and whether the Chancellor herself expressed her concern at the time.
Yes, sir.
In light of this, is it helpful to our relationship with the Chancellor or our relationship with German intelligence to bring this up again in a public forum?
It certainly complicates things, but again, I'd like to think that our relationship is such we're going to be able to deal and keep moving forward.
So our relationships with the British and the Germans, you hope, are strong enough to withstand any damage done by these comments?
By anything in general, sir. We have foundational interests with each other, and we need to keep working together.
Director Comey, let me ask you a few questions you may or may not be able to answer. Do you know who Roger Stone is?
Generally, yes.
Are you aware that he was a partner of Paul Manafort?
You know, Mr. Schiff, I'm worried we're going to a place I don't want to go, which is commenting on any particular person. And so I don't think I should comment. I'm aware of public accounts, but I don't want to talk more than that.
Are you aware that he has publicly acknowledged having directly communicated with Guccifer II, someone that the intelligence community has assessed was a persona of Russian intelligence?
I've read media accounts to that effect, and I don't want to hurt anybody's feeling in the media. I don't know whether that's accurate or not.
If Mr. Stone acknowledged that Mr. Podesta's time in the barrel was coming in August of 2016, would that have been prior to the public release of stolen emails of Mr. Podesta's?
I believe that's a correct chronology.
Do you know how Mr. Stone would have known that Mr. Podesta's emails were going to be released?
It's not something I can comment on.
Do you know that Mr. Podesta has said that at the time he was not even aware of whether his emails had been stolen and would be published?
It's not something I can comment on.
Am I correct that when we say Russian hacking, what we are referring to is the fact that the intelligence community believes that the Russians penetrated the networks of the DNC, of John Podesta, and other individuals, stole information, and then disseminated that information? Is that a fair characterization of the conclusions of the intelligence community?
Yes, sir.
And did the intelligence community ever do an analysis as to whether the dissemination of that adverse information in a closely fought election had any effect on the American electorate?
No, sir. The U.S. intelligence community does not do assessments
of course not.
Policy
that's
U.S. opinion. Public
that's
opinion.
Not your job. Was there any equivalent dissemination of adverse information stolen from the RNC or individuals associated with the Trump campaign?
No.
Thank you. Director Comey, and is it fair to say that you're still relatively early in your investigation?
It's hard to say because I don't know how much longer it will take, but we've been doing this. This investigation began in late July, so for a counterintelligence investigation, that's a fairly short period of time.
So you use the word coordination, which to me suggests that you are in fact investigating whether there was coordination between U.S. persons and the Russians. Is it fair for me to assume that we shouldn't simply dismiss the possibility that there was coordination or collusion between the Russian efforts and U.S. persons as an investigatory body?
All I can tell you is what we're investigating, which includes whether there was any coordination between people associated with the Trump campaign and the Russians.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Director Comey, you and I were discussing the felonious dissemination of classified material during the last round. Is there an exception in the law for current or former U.S. officials who request anonymity?
To release classified information?
Yes, sir.
No.
Is there an exception in the law for reporters who want to break a story?
Well, that's a harder question as to whether a reporter incurs criminal liability by publishing classified information, and one probably beyond my ken. I'm not as good a lawyer as Mr. Schiff said I used to be.
Well, I don't know about that, but the statute does use the word publish, doesn't it?
It does, but that's a question I know the Department of Justice has struggled with through administration after administration.
I know the department struggled with it, the Fourth Circuit struggled with it, lots of people have struggled with it, but you're not aware of an exception in the current dissemination of classified information statute that carves out an exception for reporters.
No, I'm not aware of anything carved out in the statute. I don't think a reporter's been prosecuted, certainly in my lifetime, though.
Well, there have been a lot of statutes at bar in this investigation for which no one's ever been prosecuted or convicted, and that does not keep people from discussing those statutes, namely the Logan Act. In theory, how would reporters know a U.S. citizen made a telephone call to an agent of a foreign power?
How would they know legally?
Yes.
If it was declassified and then discussed in a judicial proceeding or a congressional hearing, something like that.
And assume none of those facts are at play, how would they know?
Someone told them who shouldn't have told them.
How would a reporter know about the existence of intercepted phone calls?
Well, same thing. In a legitimate way, through a appropriate proceeding where there's been declassification. In any other way, in an illegitimate way.
How would reporters know if a transcript existed of an intercepted communication?
Same answer. The only legitimate way would be through a proceeding, appropriate proceeding. The illegitimate way would be somebody told them who shouldn't have told them.
Admiral Rogers said there are 20 people within the NSA that are part of the unmasking process. How many people within the FBI are part of the unmasking process?
I don't know for sure as I sit here. Surely more. Given the nature of the FBI's work, we come into contact with U.S. persons a whole lot more than the NSA does, because we may be conduct our operations in the United States to collect electronic surveillance, to conduct electronic surveillance. So I can find out the exact number. I don't know it as I sit here.
Well, I think, Director Comey, given the fact that you and I agree this is critical, vital, indispensable, a similar program is coming up for reauthorization this fall with a pretty strong headwind right now. It would be nice to know the universe of people who have the power to unmask a U.S. citizen's name, because that might provide something of a roadmap to investigate who might have actually disseminated a masked U.S. citizen's name.
Sure, the number is relevant, but what I hope the U.S., the American people will realize is the number is important, but the culture behind it is, in fact, more important. The training, the rigor, the discipline. We are obsessive about FISA and the FBI for reasons I hope make sense to this committee, but we are everything that's FISA has to be labeled in such a way to warn people, this is FISA, we treat this in a special way. So we can get you the number, but I want to assure you the culture of the FBI and the NSA around how we treat U.S. person information is obsessive, and I mean that in a good way.
NSA, FBI, what other U.S. government agencies have the authority to unmask a U.S. citizen's name?
Well, I think all agencies that collect information pursuant to FISA have what are called standard minimization procedures, which are approved by the FISA court, that govern how they will treat U.S. person information. So I know the NSA does, I know the CIA does, obviously the FBI does. I don't know for sure beyond that.
How about Maine Justice?
I mean, Maine Justice, I think, does have standard minimization procedures.
All right, so that's four. The NSA, FBI, CIA, Maine Justice. Does the White House have the authority to unmask a U.S. citizen's name?
I think other elements of the government that are consumers of our products can ask the collectors to unmask. The unmasking resides with those who collected the information. And so if Mike Rogers' folks collected something and they send it to me in a report and it says U.S. person number one, and it's important for the FBI to know who that is, our request will go back to them. The White House can make similar requests of the FBI or of NSA, but they don't on their own collect, and so they can't on their own unmask.
And assuming for the sake of argument that a U.S. citizen's name appeared in the Washington Post and the New York Times unlawfully, where would you begin that investigation?
Well, I'm not going to talk about any particular investigation.
That's why I said in theory.
You would start by figuring out, so who are the suspects? Who touched the information that you've concluded ended up unlawfully in the newspaper? And start with that universe and then use investigative tools and techniques to see if you can eliminate people or include people as more serious suspects.
Do you know whether Director Clapper knew the name of the U.S. citizen that appeared in the New York Times and Washington Post?
I can't say in this forum because, again, I don't want to confirm that there was classified information in the newspaper.
Would he have access to an unmasked name?
In some circumstances, sure. He was the Director of National Intelligence, but I'm not talking about the particular.
Would Director Brennan have access to an unmasked U.S. citizen's name?
In some circumstances, yes.
Would National Security Advisor Susan Rice have access to an unmasked U.S. citizen's name?
I think any, yes, in general, and any other National Security Advisor would, I think, as a matter of their ordinary course of their business.
Would former White House Advisor Ben Rhodes have access to an unmasked U.S. citizen's name?
I don't know the answer to that.
Would former Attorney General Loretta Lynch have access to an unmasked U.S. citizen's name?
In general, yes, as would any Attorney General.
So that would also include Acting AG Sally Yates?
Same answer.
Did you brief President Obama on any calls involving Michael Flynn?
I'm not going to get into either that particular case, that matter, or any conversations I had with the president, so I can't answer that.
Paul Manafort, who is Roger Stone's business partner and former and Trump's former campaign manager, I want to ask a few questions about him. First, Director Comey, can you tell me what the Foreign Agents Registration Act is?
Sure. Not in an expert way, but it's a statute that requires people who are acting as agents of a non-U.S. government to register with the United States.
Right. So the National Security Division of the Department of Justice writes, this is their manual, the purpose of FARA, as it is known, is to ensure that the U.S. government and the people of the United States are informed of the source of information and the identity of persons attempting to influence U.S. public opinion, policy, and laws, unquote. Would you agree that guarding against foreign espionage or foreign influence measures falls under this heading?
Yes.
In general, is willful violation or failure to register pursuant to this law in some circumstances a crime?
I believe it is. I'm not an expert on FARA, but I believe it is.
And it could lead certainly to counterintelligence concerns, right?
Yes.
Mr. Comey, is it fair to say that the line that exists in the United States between government officers and government officials is blurred in Russia, that there may be oligarchs or other individuals who on the surface appear to be private citizens but who have connections to this close-knit cabal who might be agents of influence or might be doing the Kremlin's bidding in contact with others?
That's fair to say, and one of our counterintelligence missions is to try to understand who are those people and are they acting on behalf of the Russian government, those Russian citizens.
Is it generally true that there is a category of Russian oligarchs that are likely part of this close-knit cabal?
In a general sense.
And if they go way back with Vladimir Putin, do the chances increase that they might be connected with the KGB, as is asserted by Professor Dawisha?
The longevity of the association can be a consideration.
And the KGB was the Russian intelligence service under the Soviet Union, right?
Correct.
And the Ukraine was part of the Soviet Union?
Correct.
I'll just observe, Rinat Akhmetov, a steel and iron ore magnate, or oligarch, is the richest man in Ukraine and a strong Putin ally. He was the one who reportedly recommended Paul Manafort to Yanukovych. Mr. Comey, last set of questions for me. I have a report that appeared in CNN yesterday. The headline is, former Trump campaign chief Paul Manafort wanted for questioning in Ukraine corruption case. And I raise this with you because the story is told of Paul Manafort acting on behalf of Ukraine's former justice minister, Oleksandr Lavrinovich, who was the justice minister under the previous pro-Russian regime, who, and I'll just read a segment from this story here, who was involved in jailing the former prime minister, Tymoshenko, who was the main political rival of the Kremlin-backed President Viktor Yanukovych, whom Manafort advised until he was deposed in 2014. Tymoshenko was released from jail at the same time that Yanukovych was ousted. Many saw her sentencing as politically motivated by the pro-Russian government. In response to the deteriorating international climate, Ukrainian prosecutors say Manafort drafted a public relations strategy that included hiring Skadden Arps, an American law firm, to review the Tymoshenko case and show the conviction had a sound legal basis. The story goes on to talk about the transfer of over $1 million, potentially illegally, from Ukrainian coffers to Skadden Arps. And the reason I bring all this up with you is because the story also says, and it appears to have been confirmed by the Department of Justice, that the current Ukraine regime, hardly a friend of the Russians and very much targeted by the Russians, has made 7 requests to the United States government, for assistance under the MLA treaty in securing the assistance of Paul Manafort as part of this anti-corruption case. And in fact, the story says that you were presented personally with a letter asking for that assistance. So my question, Director Comey, is that all true? Have you been asked to provide assistance to the current Ukrainian government with respect to Paul Manafort, and how do you intend to respond to that request?
That's not something I can comment on. I can say generally we have a very strong relationship and cooperation in the criminal and national security areas with our Ukrainian partners, but I can't talk about the particular matter.
Do you think it's possible that the Russians would not be trying to infiltrate Hillary Clinton's campaign, get information on Hillary Clinton, and try to get to people that are around that campaign or the Clinton Foundation?
I'm not prepared to comment about the particular campaigns, but the Russians in general are always trying to understand who the future leaders might be and what levers of influence there might be on them.
But when it comes to trying to determine intent of foreign leaders, can you walk us through how the NSA does that or the FBI does that?
We assess the range of information that we've collected in an attempt to generate understanding as to not only what has occurred, but part of the intelligence profession is also trying to understand why, what was the intent. We'll use the range of information we have available to us while we're primarily a single-source organization. It's one reason why organizations like CIA, the Defense Intelligence Agency, which take multiple sources to try to put together a complete picture. So we're just one component of a broader effort.
Director Comey, anything different than that?
No, it's about putting together a puzzle. Sometimes from forensics alone, you can get a pretty good indication as to what they must be intending to accomplish. Other times it requires human sources and additional signals intelligence to give you that sense.
So both of you agree, though, it's rarely a precise art or a precise science of determining intent of any foreign leader.
That's correct. All of intelligence work requires judgment. That's at the center of it.
But I will say in some cases, it's a much clearer case than in others. There are some places.
That depends, I guess, on the sources you have inside a particular foreign leader's shop.
I'm not going to get into the specifics.
Pivoting to the January 6th intelligence community assessment, both your agencies agree with the assessment that the Russians' goal was to undermine the public faith in the U.S. democratic process. Is that still your assessment?
Yes.
Same assessment said that the Russians' goal was to wanted to denigrate Secretary Clinton and harm her electability and potential presidency, and that Putin wanted to discredit Secretary Clinton because he publicly blamed her since 2011 for inciting mass protests against his regime in late 2011 and early 2012. You both still agree with that assessment?
Yes.
Yes.
And then finally, Admiral Rogers, that assessment went on to say that President Putin and the Russian government aspire to help candidate Trump at the time, but President-elect Trump's election chances when possible by discrediting Secretary Clinton. You had a lower
confidence level.
Is that still the case?
Yes, sir.
Can you tell the group why you were?
I'm not going to get into specifics in unclassified form, but for me, it boiled down to the level and nature of the sourcing on that one particular judgment was slightly different to me than the others.
All right.
To be clear, Mr. Conaway, we all agreed with that judgment.
But you really agreed, and he almost really agreed.
Not terms our folks use, but I guess.
Not a term of art. I got you.
In my original questions to you, I asked you whether the intelligence community had undertaken any sort of study to determine whether Russian interference had any influence on the electoral process, and I think you told me the answer was no.
Correct.
Correct. We said the U.S. intelligence community does not do analysis or reporting on the U.S. political process or U.S. public opinion. That is
okay.
Not our fault.
So thanks to the modern technology that's in front of me right here, I've got a tweet from the president an hour ago saying the NSA and FBI tell Congress that Russia did not influence the electoral process. So that's not quite accurate, that tweet.
I'm sorry, I haven't been following anybody on Twitter while I've been sitting here.
I can read it to you. It says the NSA and FBI tell Congress that Russia did not influence the electoral process. This tweet has gone out to millions of Americans, 16.1 million to be exact. Is the tweet, as I read it to you, the NSA and FBI tell Congress that Russia did not influence the electoral process, is that accurate?
Yeah. Well, it's hard for me to react to that. Let me just tell you what we understand the state of what we've said is. We've offered no opinion, have no view, have no information on potential impact because it's never something that we looked at.
Okay. So it's not too far of a logical leap to conclude that the assertion that you have told the Congress that there was no influence on the electoral process is not quite right.
Right. It certainly wasn't our intention to say that today because we don't have any information on that subject. And that's not something that was looked at.
Admiral Rogers, before I yield back to the ranking member, there's another tweet that says, NSA Director Rogers tells Congress unmasking individuals endangers national security. My understanding was, as a member of the committee, that there is a lengthy and very specific process for the unmasking, but that it does not inherently in of itself endanger national
security. I assume the comment is designed to address the leaking of such information. But again, I have not read what you're saying to me, so I'm not in a position a comment on it, sir.
The Lawfare podcast is produced in cooperation with, hold on a second, yes, that's right, the Brookings Institution. I suspect that many of you have not yet done your part to promote the Lawfare podcast. You haven't tweeted it yet. You haven't shared it on Facebook. You haven't gone to the iTunes store and given us that 5-star rating you so know we deserve. Our music is performed, as ever, by Sophia Yan, who never fails to do her duty by the Lawfare podcast. Be like Sophia. Get it done, people. Thanks for listening.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel, a pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.